So thanks. Again, my name is Peter Vincent, and I'm over at OPG. We do obviously a lot of things that, in fact, I see some of my colleagues in the audience too, that we use optimization a lot. It's very important to us. And I'll try to explain why that is. So with the rise in commodities and energy prices, this is becoming a big focus for everybody. It's not as cheap as it used to be to make electricity and to heat your house. I'm going to try to introduce to you, first of all, what we are. We're a company where we have multiple plants all over Ontario. We've got something like 70 little hydro plants and some not so little, like the Niagara Falls plants, Saunders, which is on the St. Lawrence River. We've got a couple of nuclear plants. We've got a bunch of fossil plants, some coal, one of the biggest in North America, Nanticoke, at 4,000 megawatts, and a really huge gas plant, again, one of the biggest, Lennox in Kingston, and a couple of other scattered coal around the province. So maybe I should say, for those of you, like the first thing you got to know is what is a megawatt, I suppose, because I'm going to be using that a lot. And a megawatt is the standard unit that we use on the trading floor and usually when talking about production of electricity at OPG. And a megawatt is obviously a million watts, which means, just so you get a sense of comparison, your hair dryer is about 1,000 watts when you turn it on. If you ran that for an hour, you've got a kilowatt hour. And if you ran 1,000 of those for an hour, you got a megawatt hour. And a megawatt hour usually runs you about $50, but can be anywhere from $50 to 1,000 or sometimes five, depending on the time of day and various other factors. Another way of comparing it is it's 10,000 light bulbs running for an hour. So demand is the key thing you have to start with. That's what the people of Ontario are doing with electricity, what they're using, and every given second, an hour, and minute. We have really, this is also a reflection of sort of what how people behave. It's the response that humans have to a couple of things: to nature, to weather. When it gets hot, you turn on your air conditioner. When it gets cold, if you have an electric heater, you turn that on. When it gets dark, you turn your lights on. And all those are the major drivers. But there's also a lot of little drivers and not so little drivers that are human driven. And that's when a pulp and paper mill, for example, decides to shut down its plant, it doesn't use its 4 megawatts. When you have something that, you know, a lot of people are working late for during tax season, you've got more lights on down in the downtown core in the commercial buildings. So human behavior driven by human events is also very important. I'll show you. So the other thing to know about demand is it seems like we may be able to tell you exactly what's going to happen tomorrow with the load. And we're not bad at it, but it's very difficult to predict, even if we knew the weather exactly, what people are going to do. So you can see that I've graphed here about 3 months worth of the primary demand for Ontario. The other thing you probably want to know is how much do we use here? Well, we use 25,000 megawatts, roughly 26,000 sometimes, as a peak. And at the lowest period of time, when nobody's doing anything, we're still using a lot of electricity. We're still using 12,000 megawatts of electricity. And the key is to go from the 12,000 to the 26,000. That's the difficult part. And that's where optimization comes in. When do you turn your option, which is a generator, on to meet this demand that the people of Ontario are producing? So I thought I'd go into the details and look a little bit more closely at a daily demand. Anybody got an idea of what season this is? Just take a guess. Shout it out. Season of the year. Not spring, not summer. It's winter. And how can you tell that it's winter? The peak is at 6 o'clock, which is the peak. And what's the peak from? That's right. That's one of them, and it coincides with one other peak in the winter, light, the lighting peak. So you see a human behavior one when work finishes, and you see a weather-driven one, nature-driven one, which is the sun goes down. And those coincide in the winter at 6 o'clock, and that's where your demand is. There's a couple of other features that you'll notice. Is that laser? There we go. Sorry? Oh, good. Okay, thanks. What's happening here? Well, everybody's getting up in the morning. And if you look carefully, it's not as obvious on this as it is sometimes. Let me take a poll first. How many of you set your alarms for numbers that end with a 30 or a 00? So 6:37, 7:30. That looks about a half of you. And the rest of you, presumably, it's 6:52 and 7:11, and the students at 9:29. That matters, because whenever the people of Ontario do things at the same time, it shows up here. So at 7:05, when everybody gets out and turns on their shower and their electric water heaters kick in, you see suddenly these masses of load come screaming in, superimposed across, you know, all the randomness of the 6:52 people. You've got a lot of people doing something at 6:35 and 7:05, turning their lights on, putting the kettle on, turning the shower on. And that kind of stuff is very obvious. You can tell what the people of Ontario are doing if you just sit and watch the load. So let's look at another day. What season is this? Shout it out. Summer. It's summer. That's right. And how can you tell that it's summer? There's two reasons. Early afternoon peak, which means when the weather is the hottest, and air conditioners are very, very important in the province's electricity consumption. And that's when the buildings and the residential air conditioners are humming along at their highest levels. And what's that? At 8 p.m., it's the lighting load coming in. And that all also makes a difference. This thing here is called, some people I know at OPG coined it, the Johnny Carson blip from back when he used to be on. And that's because it's happening a little earlier these days at either the end of the national, but the television shows are over, people go to bed, and they do a lot of things that consume electricity in that 5 to 10 minutes after. So you see a peak there very frequently. In fact, you can see triple overtime hockey games end as well. which is kind of fun to have a look at. What day of the year, what particular day of the year is this? It's just one, only happens once a year. It's not Christmas, but that's a good guess. People are probably sleeping in even later than Christmas. New Year's Day. People are getting up, they take an aspirin around 8 o'clock in the morning, go back to bed and don't do anything until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, where they finally heat up some lunch or something like that, and then the lights come on. So this is not a sociology lesson that I'm trying to portray, but the reason is I wanted to show you that there's a certain amount of predictability. This is what drives load, and the optimization problem is in how do you meet this? How do we get the generators and the supply to meet demand? In electricity, supply and demand have to equal each other at every instant. It's unique in the commodity world, in the world, because it's the only one where at every millisecond, at every microsecond, they have to equal by the laws of physics. So the problem is that you can't, the transmission grid will ensure, and physics will ensure that happens. But if it's not balanced by the generators and the load, the generators meeting the load roughly, the whole system becomes unstable. And you saw it happen 2-3 years ago in August when we had the blackout. That's why, is because it gets too far out. So in the meantime, you actually want to try to balance with this market that we're running to get the generators to be roughly where you need to be to meet that load. So I'll go through the supply, and seems like a pretty easy problem, right? You've got a bunch of things that you can run. They each cost a varying amount of money, and presumably you run the cheap ones first, and everything more expensive, as you require more and more energy, which is how, in principle, it works. You can see this is an old slide that I have where natural gas used to be priced in there cheaper than the peaking hydro and biomass and wind. Now, of course, natural gas prices have gone very, very high, although they've softened a little bit recently, just recently. Makes it a less economic decision, economical decision to run natural gas. So what do you do? Well, if you're the market person, you want to meet demand, you just take everybody's costs and you stack them up from lowest to highest. And in the stack, this is a fairly representative stack, you got nuclear, NUGs, which means non-utility generators. They just run, this is stuff like if you got waste heat from an industrial process, which has its own economics, you drive that generator based on that. So it just runs whenever it wants to run and not based on a price signal. So they don't, they're price takers. Same with wind. The wind blows when it wants to blow. Base hydro, the water's coming down and you can't do anything about it, so you got to run your turbines. A little bit more optionality with the BEC, which is the Niagara Falls. And then you've got the fossil fuel stuff. And that is a truer option in that they're burning coal to generate electricity. So since they use up a commodity that's with a price that everybody can see, you know, coal being significantly cheaper than gas, that's next on the stack. And then at the very top, once you start really running short of electricity, which is what creates these spikes, is you're running these CTUs, airplane engines, basically, or you're, you know, draining your water pond to the very lowest levels to just get that last megawatt of electricity out. And then how do you find the price? Well, you find the price by taking the demand that the people of Ontario are creating and plunking it on the graph, the stack. The marginal generator is the person who that intersects, and whatever their offer, whatever their cost is, that's what the price of electricity is. So how do you make the profit, which is the key question, I guess, that we're talking about when we're talking about optimization. Everybody below that makes between their cost and whatever that clearing price is. So these guys down here, all the nuclear and low-priced coal, these prices are a little antiquated. They're a little cheap for what a true price is, but these guys are making some money. This guy's making no money because he's the marginal unit, and this poor fellow up here is not making any money because he's not running. He's not asked to run because his fuel costs more than the price of electricity at the time and than the people of Ontario needed. So this is sort of what that, well, actually, it's not a very big change in a day, but as we go from an off-peak to an on-peak price, you can see what turns on. The nuclear and the imports, and well, the imports are a separate question I'll discuss later. The coal, and the finally, at the very top, when demand gets to its peak, in this case, it's probably in the winter, which is why it has the double peak, you turn on some gas units just to get over that peak. So they don't run very often. They create a high price. Nuclear runs all the time, but it's never actually the one asked to turn on and off. It's not the margin unit. What constitutes the price? I'll focus on the fossil fuels. Now, you'd expect that, well, coal plant, coal, the price of coal times the heat rate is what you're going to charge to the market. Not entirely true. The price of coal, first of all, you buy the coal, and that's the black part here if we're looking at what constitutes a, these are just indicative kind of prices, but the price of coal is only half the cost of running a coal unit. The other half is you got to get the coal to your plant, and you got to put it on a rail car, and you have to put it on a boat, and you have to unload the boat and put it in a pile. You also are putting out emissions, NOx and SOx, and that, in a sense, because it's limited how much you're allowed to put out, has a value. You could, if you go through that value that you're allowed to put out, you have to buy from somebody else who has generated an emission credit, and that has a price that's quoted out on the market. It's a commodity just like anything else. Well, in a sense, it's a commodity. And if you had extra, if you decided not to run your coal plant, you could sell your emissions credits to somebody else, and that way stay under whatever the cap is for emissions credit for emissions. The other thing is, whenever you start a unit or even just run it, there are thermal stresses. The boilers will change shape, the cracks propagate in the metal, and every once in a while, in fact fairly frequently, 10-20% of the time, you have to take the unit down and you have to replace things. And you have to, occasionally it fails when you're not expecting it and you have to do some stuff, you've got labor. And so you've got to recover those costs from the market in somehow. So oftentimes you'll see a component of the price as a maintenance cost. As well, you've got to burn fuel to start the thing up, and you're not always compensated for that, depending on the market mechanism. So that's another component of the price. And you can see just how it compares to gas, a gas plant, where by far the majority of the cost, and that's the yellow, is the cost of gas. There's a little bit for transportation, tiny bit of emissions, and a little bit of maintenance as well. And you can see here, for comparison, this is where this is a probability distribution function of the load, the blue, and that shows you where our demand lies, remembering that it goes between, you know, your 12,000 and your 26,000. It's mostly actually over the fossil fuel area. These are the ones that are asked to go on and off, to ramp up and down, and to set the price. So coal and gas are the main drivers of the price of power in Ontario. So it seems simple, just to review. You've got the people of Ontario doing stuff, creating demand, and you've got the generators of Ontario running at various levels to meet that demand. And you have wires in between them to get the electrons from one place to another. Sounds simple. The strategy would be just to offer above your cost and below your competitors such that you can maximize your generation and maximize the price. Now, it's not quite that simple. It sounds like just an option with a strike price. But in fact, you are partially affecting the price of power by your offers. So it's not just that you can value this thing on a going forward basis by looking at whatever your costs are and saying what your estimate of your price is. The price is not exogenous. You affect it because you offer your price into the market. And it doesn't just come from anywhere. The prices are all made up by these incremental costs from the generators. The second problem is you don't, this option, all these plants you have, these real options, you don't actually know your strike price. I mean, you kind of know what your strike price is, but there's a lot of issues with timing of what your coal price actually is, when you buy it, what the spot price is, all sorts of logistical issues. And I'll get into that a little bit better, a little bit later. The other thing is, you have, in fact, this option does not exercise itself. You have to tell them. It's not an automatic option. You have to actually say, I want to exercise that option on that hour. And you exercise it, whether it's above your strike price or below your strike price. And it's also a string of options. It's minute to minute, 5 minute to 5 minute, hour to hour, and month to month that you exercise these options. So timing is a big issue and has a big impact on what you're actually going to make. They offer it, you tell the market the price at which you're willing to run every 2 hours, every hour but 2 hours ahead of time. So you say, in that hour, I will run if the price gets above this price. And then they'll say, okay, go ahead. And you can't change that after the 2 hours time window. However, they dispatch you and they tell you to turn up and turn down and run and not run. I mean, not turn the whole plant off, but above, within these limitations and the constraints, which I'll talk about, they tell you that every 5 minutes. So that's it exactly illustrates the timing issues that you run into. You have to predict your strike price, and you have a whole bunch of other issues about timing that I'll get into. The other thing is that there's a bunch of market rules that say when and that very complex market rules that tell you when you can exercise your option and when you can't. So they'll say, I'm sorry, no, your option is not exercisable this hour, or it's only exercisable halfway. And that's how I characterize the market rules and how they impact this option that you have. And the last elements of this option are that they're constrained in that you can't go from, because of the timing issues, these 5-minute options that you're trying to exercise have a lot of dependence on the previous option and such things. So I'll talk a bit more about that. First of all, from the cost side, why don't we know the cost? Well, we know roughly the cost of coal, for example, but we buy coal, you know, 3 months in advance. There's a price for that coal. You'd say, okay, I have an option to either sell the coal back to the market or to burn it and to make electricity. Well, in reality, once the coal gets on a train, in a boat, onto your pile, it's not like you can just scrape a bit off and sell it to somebody. There's all sorts of logistical problems with that. You don't have any shipping. Nobody's going to buy a small bit of coal. So this means that most of your decisions in terms of buying coal, as an example, are made on a very, very different time scale, and means that you don't really know what the incremental cost of that coal you're burning during that 1 5-minute period for that 1 megawatt is, or at least there's lots of noise. Similarly for gas, although it's a little bit more immediate because the gas pipelines have a lot faster deliverability. The other thing is you don't even know your heat rate. You don't know what the multiple of your strike price is. You don't know how much coal it's going to take to make 1 megawatt, because it depends on a myriad of things. These are very, very complex engineering systems, the plants, and they depend on a lot of things like the cooling temperature, the lake temperature, and a whole host of other things. That means you're not exactly sure about that either. Makes the optimization that much more difficult. For nuclear plants, for example, you have the fuel costs don't even matter really in nuclear, because the uranium that you buy is cheap when compared with staffing these plants, making sure they're all safe and everything, just running the things all together. And for that reason, and then secondly, if you shut the thing down, it's got to stay off for 2 days. So a nuclear plant would rather, for example, lose money for 5 hours so that it'll be there for the next 2 days making money than ramp itself down or turn itself off for this hour or that hour. So opportunity costs are the prime cost in nuclear, not the stuff that it actually burns. Must run hydro, wind and solar, well, as I mentioned before, there's no optimization possible. You're at the mercy of the elements, the caprices of nature. When the wind blows, it blows, so you're just going to take the price as it stands. Hydro plants, the interesting thing there is your costs are also opportunity costs, in that sort of the inverse of the nuclear plants. Here, you've only got in many plants, maybe you can only run it for 4 hours a day or 4 hours a week. Choosing those best 4 hours is the trick. When are you going to make that decision to exercise this plant and this option? The fuel falls for the sky, so that has nothing to do with the cost of running a plant, although we do pay taxes on this shared resource. And the interties are the other thing that messes up your ability to do this optimization. These are supposedly based on cost, but really it's a bunch of traders that are trying to move power from one market with one set of rules to another market with another set of rules. And these loosely base it on their forecast of the future price, but again, there's tons of noise that goes in there, there's tons of risk, and they have to tell, before they know what the prices are generally, they have to say how much they want to flow. And they do it with these price quantity pairs as well, but they're taking a lot of risk. And so again, you're blurred out. You don't know exactly what your competitors are doing, what their prices are. You don't know what your own costs are, for that matter. I guess from this, from my perspective, the market rules are probably one of the most important elements. And this is because they don't simulate real plants with all these myriad of constraints, which I'll talk about. They try to make it a fair but simple optimization problem that they have, where you just tell them the price and the quantity. However, because it doesn't represent the characteristics of the generator to a particularly high degree, you end up having to do all these sort of kludges and changes that can change some of your incentives and financial incentives and lead to some odd behavior in the plants. Oh, sorry, I thought you were asking a question there. Interties are not, in Ontario, allowed to set price. Once they decide they're coming in, they go to the bottom of the stack and they're not considered in the problem. They have made some changes to try to accommodate the market as best it can, but they consider, for example, that you can ramp your unit from 0 to 60 at 12 times the ramp you really can when they're setting the price. So these disconnects, there's other stuff like in a constraint on and constraint off. When you're limited by transmission, you actually still get to keep yourself whole, and that's to the market price, but it can lead to these weird financial incentives. Same thing with regulatory and PPAs, where you may not be incented, depending on the contractual terms that you have in your PPA, to run your unit at exactly the same with exactly the same incentives as the market, as the person who was running in an open market. Again, this is also one of the most important things, is that timing is everything. When you're trying to do these optimizations, you have to tell, remember, you have to tell them when you want to exercise the option. It's not an automatic exercise. And what you have to be planning is, because you have to take your units out for 10 or 20% of the time, you have to decide when you want to do that. If you're not around when the price spikes, you're not going to make that money. You also have to, as I mentioned, buy the coals and the emission credits, which are, you know, seriously non-liquid, or with logistical problems about getting it back and forth physically. You have to do all that decision months out. Days out, you have to also plan some outages and buy the gas. Hours out, to address your question, you have to tell them that you're going to be on. You have to make the decision ahead of time to turn on, because a unit usually has a minimum run and takes a little while to get there. So if you want to actually be considered part of the market, 4 or 5 hours out, you have to turn, or 8 hours sometimes, you have to turn your coal plant on, and it takes a little while to heat up all the boilers, to bring the unit up to speed, to start spinning it, and then to synchronize it to the grid. And that takes, that's something that you have to do based on imperfect information, because the price you're going to get is something that only happens on the 5-minute basis. 2 hours out, you have to tell them your exact price quantity pairs, and the imports and the exports. The traders who are bringing power in and out also have that incentive. 5 minutes is what you get paid for. That's whatever you're running, we'll pay you whatever the 5-minute MCP is, and we'll do the whole solution based on your price that you've offered in. And then beneath that, in a non-market way, they solve the any imbalances on a 5-second basis with automated generation control, just to get whatever error there's still left between, you know, mismatch between demand and load, between load and supply, they'll handle on a 5-second basis, and then physics will handle it instantaneously. So I mentioned some of the constraints that we run into. Again, oh. The day ahead is, yeah, currently there is no day ahead market. That's just a guess that they have to help market participants plan, for example, when they're going to start their units up. It's the best information that they can provide at the time, which is everybody who wants to bid in their PQ pairs in advance of that 2-hour limit can do so. You can change it all the way up to the 2-hour period ahead. Now, they're going to be implementing something where it's a bit more of a commitment called the day-ahead commitment process, and that will force you to live a little bit more by whatever the prices you put in at that period of time is and the quantities. In addition to which, they're probably going to introduce a day-ahead, a truly financial settlement day-ahead market in, I guess, 2 or 3 years or sometime after the day-ahead commitment process. But you're right. You can, you can change anything you want, as far as I know. I don't think there's any rules except for on the 2-hour, and there's a little bit you can do after the 2 hours if they accept if they're in trouble, and if something happens to your unit, like it goes out, clearly they can't dispatch you, so you have to tell them that. And so from a constraint perspective on a physical plant level. Yeah, I mean, that's what market rules are designed to prevent gaming, and they acknowledge that there are imperfections, that real plants don't operate the way they've modeled them in their optimization problem, and that some of the additional incentives to try to get you to get the system stable could be gamed. And they have market surveillance panels that will look for that kind of behavior and will clamp down on it. And obviously, in a climate where you, after California, people are trying to do the best thing and saying, here's really our costs as best we can guess them, and here's how we want to operate. So if it's due to the market not solving the problem correctly, that's okay. There's always tolerance bands, but they're looking at anything that could be construed as gaming. There's departments of the ISO that do that. So there's a whole bunch of limitations on plants that are going to prevent you from exercising this optimally, and that means that you don't know exactly what's going to happen at the exact time when they set the price, and you've had to forecast this ahead of time. To quickly go through them, and you can have the chemistry and the ramp rates in nuclear. For fossil, you've got to run at a certain base minimum level. It's not a stable operating point below your minimum run. You've got to stay on for a certain amount of period, and you've got to stay off once you go off for a minimum amount of period. You can run into stuff like coal that's a little bit wet. Your unit gets derated. It doesn't run as much as you thought it would be, or it's not operating at the same heat rate, and therefore the strike price has changed a little bit. In hydro, it's especially important. You've got to respect the environmental limits for fish spawning. You got a lot of interest groups as a shared resource with a river. You have cottagers who don't like when their dock is dry or flooded, and they, the boards that control the water set limits such that the cottagers don't have that happen to them. And you've also got, of course, different energy efficiencies of the turbines when you have different levels of amount of water in the forebay. So a higher head means you got a bit more efficiency. When the water's low, you have less efficiency typically. And again, wind is not something that you control at all, really. You can disconnect the turbine, but and as I mentioned before, you have also the geographical constraints of transmission, that when the pipes get full, you can't move an economical plant's power to where it needs to get to. Like, for example, we have that problem in Ontario. When there's lots of economical power up in the northwest with Thunder Bay and Atikokan and some of the water up there, but it can't get down the pipe from the northwest, from Thunder Bay, all the way to Toronto where it's needed. So they actually can't run that plant, and they turn it off, and they run a more expensive, uneconomical unit down here somewhere, Lennox or some of the coal plants, to replace it just because of these transmission limitations. And these can be for stability, voltage stability or thermal limits, various other reasons that because they don't want the system to collapse, so they have very, very cautious, extra redundant limits placed on the system so that we don't actually experience any instability in the grid. So to review, we've got a lot of uncertainty on the x-axis and the y-axis. On the x-axis, you've got the weather, and you don't know what the load's going to be. The other thing is you don't know what the stack's going to be. When a big unit goes out, a nuclear unit might trip or something and have to go offline for maintenance. You don't know that, so you can't be exactly sure what the rest of the stack that you're competing against is going to look like. And the other thing you don't know is the price of those is the P part of a PQ pair, price quantity pair. You don't know how much it's going to cost Exactly. There's a lot of uncertainty. Gas and coal, the price moves. And secondly, you don't even know exactly what that price is, what your strike price is. So all this uncertainty, and I listed a bunch of some of the other effects that impact you when you're trying to do this optimization, it makes it a very, very difficult indeed problem to solve. So to wrap it up here, just to show you that where the I think this is probably 2 years of history or so from the market. Who is setting the price? Who's the marginal unit? Most of it is coal and gas. Below that, sometimes you get into water setting the price, and above that, you get into these airplane engines or imports and exports pushing the price up to some very, high-priced water, which is only run once, 1 hour per year or something like that. And here's the price from yesterday and up to this morning. You can see how volatile electricity is and how difficult it would be to optimize as against an exogenous price. Here it looks like some gas has turned on and then turned off 5 minutes later, at least. It's not really turning off, but it's showing up in the price during that period of time. This is probably gas too. And down here, this is all coal price. And then at night when we don't need much power, we're spilling water. There's water going down the spillways or over the falls, and the price there would be essentially what the value of that water is the tax value of that water, the water tax. So with that, I will pass it over to Hans for his electrifying presentation. That's a 500 kV power line open, just to show you. It's very powerful, moving electricity from a generator to a load center.
Thanks for that.
All yours, Hans.